You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Kara Elizabeth. We talk about a career change, a very modern career change. Kara built up a successful brick and mortar, respected career, and then she burned it all down for something else. So we talk about her mindset and path to a traditional and respected career, and then how and why she shifted that in order to make a change. I also asked Kara about whether she experienced a penalty socially and even financially by making this shift. And spoiler alert, yes. So you'll have to listen to get the details about that. This is a good story. I think you're going to like it. So let's get to the interview already. Kara Elizabeth, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm super happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here on your show.
I'm happy to have you. So I always start by asking the same question. Tell us what part of the world you call home.
Yes, right now I am in Arizona. So I'm hopefully getting into fall soon, but it's still pretty warm here.
Keep dreaming. We're recording this at the beginning of September. You got a long way to go, Kara. Not that I'm totally, yes, you know, in your business, but it's a long way from fall these days. So next question, what is your favorite way, Kara, to transition from time when you are busy and doing stuff into downtime?
I really love to just pause, stand and feel my feet on the earth and take a deep breath. And almost like mentally be like, I'm releasing my work suitcase, my work brain, and I'm putting on my home brain. I'm putting on my relaxation brain.
Very, very nice. Do you take your shoes off to do that? Is it like a full grounding thing? Okay.
Yes,
all right, very
absolutely.
Good. So that is fantastic. All right. Today, we're going to talk about a career change that you went through. And one of the reasons I like this topic is I think this is a very modern situation. So first question, can you share with us, what was the career you studied for in school?
Yes, I am a clinically trained psychotherapist. So I have my bachelor's in psychology, my master's in clinical psychology.
So my next question is, how long did it take for you to do all the schoolwork requirements to get through that? Because it's not a fast process. Like you listed it right there, but tell us how long it took to get all of that actual accreditation.
It took about 10 or 11 years.
Such a long time. Oh my goodness. That is such a long time. Oh my wow. Yes. What is the earliest memory that you have of wanting to be a therapist? Like let's back way up and talk about how old you were and when you first became aware of that.
Yes, absolutely. I was 14 years old. And so I was going through therapy myself for an eating disorder I had as an adolescent. And I remember my therapist, I mean, this was the 90s. So, you know, therapy wasn't trending. Therapy wasn't really studied or popular. And I remember my therapist, I had a particularly rough week one time and I put fat-free dressing on my salad and she lost it because I was anorexic at that time. I was not supposed to be having fat-free diet, anything. And she told me I was going to die. That's straight up what she told me. And I said a few choice words and I got up and I walked out and I told my mom, I'm never going back to her. And I decided in that moment that I wanted to be a therapist because I never wanted somebody to feel abandoned by a clinician like that before. I wanted to be a different type of clinician. I wanted to be there with them, understand, because she clearly had never had an eating disorder, didn't really understand the eating disorder world or brain. And I wanted to sit there with them and say, hey, I know that that was, thank you for sharing that with me, that you were honest with me about that. And let's work on how we can transition away from the diet foods.
So that was a sort of a shocking bombshell that somebody would say that to you. Mm-hmm. I have many, many thoughts. I probably am not, should not share any of them out loud. That is, I'm very sad that somebody said that to another human being, a person. Wow. It upsets me greatly when I hear stories, not just yours, but just anywhere in the world where you hear of somebody who's supposed to be in a helping profession, who does something that the way it's retold just sounds so out of line with what you want them to be. But on the other hand, I'm 51 and I know that there's a difference between that in every profession, there are people who are really, really good at what they do and there are people who are not great at what they do. And even beyond that, everybody has a bad day. Everybody has their limit.
Yeah.
Everybody has their limit. So you can be really, really good at what you do and have one bad day and fly off the handle. But yes, no, wow, that probably did
Absolutely.
not feel good at all. Okay, so how long did you work as a therapist? You go all the way through this. How long did you work as a therapist?
So I worked as a therapist in my own, like with licensure and things like that, for about 8 years. I was in the mental health field for about 20, because while I was going through school, I was still working in the mental health field, but as a licensed clinical therapist, about 8 years.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about that because I think I know what you mean, but I want people to sort of understand. There's a period for therapists where you've finished your schoolwork and you're working in the field, but you're not licensed yet. Is that weird? Is that the difference in what was the time gap there?
Sort of. So as there are certain levels. So while I was in school, I was doing like behavioral health tech or mental health tech or, internships. And then you graduate and you have to work for at least 2.5 hours or 2.5 years. You have to collect 3,200 hours of supervised work, but you are licensed as an
Okay.
associate level. You're licensed at an associate level, and as opposed to then finishing those hours and getting the professional independent licensure.
Okay, that's the part that I'd heard about that I was familiar with, because that is a huge amount of time to be working after you finish school.
And I had to do that twice. I had to do it back to back because the first time my supervisor's paperwork and my supervisor was out of compliant, which meant my 3,200 hours were null and void. So I actually ended up doing 6,400 hours of supervised work experience because my supervisor, who was on the list of approved supervisors for the board, was found to be out of compliance. So I could not count any of those hours. So I had to do it twice.
Twice. And my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the challenges of this is not as highly paid as when you jump up to the next thing. So you've got
Correct.
10 years of education, probably some debt in there, and you're like student teaching.
Yes,
Oh
yes.
my gosh, Carrie, that's painful to hear that you had to do that twice. Wow, that seems like just
Yeah.
really. All right, did you enjoy the work during the 8 years and 6,400 hours when you were working as a therapist?
Yes, absolutely. I loved being a therapist. I loved, and I still, I mean, I and I still have so much respect for the work I did, and I still, love that work and love that profession, of course.
Yeah, no, I mean, you put all that time into it. It makes sense that you would enjoy it. Okay, so I'm going to jump ahead and then we're going to back up and talk about how you made this decision, but share how you've changed. Share the change that you've made so that people know what we're talking about today.
Absolutely. So now I am practicing as a somatic nervous system coach. I'm doing coaching as opposed to the formal therapy at this point.
So this is why I describe this as a modern shift, because I think there's layers in here of coaching and therapists, and that's a long time. People have opinions about those two professions working together and the differences, which is not actually the primary topic. But it also, I think that we'll see if this is, because I think it's a modern problem. The topic, because some of the issues that come up with people with this are maybe because we're in 2025 and we're not in 1970. And so we'll talk about what that is. How long ago did you make this change?
I fully released my license 2 years ago, but I shifted to coaching 4 years ago. So I shifted to coaching in 2021.
All right, so let's take you a bit to, I'm not sure this is a great question. In every interview, I ask a couple questions that I'm not sure are great. Sometimes I know they're bad and I ask them anyway. This one I'm unsure.
Go for it.
So when you were working as a therapist and you began to think about, hey, I think I need to make a change. When you go back to that time, what did it feel like? Like, what was your first signal or even symptom, to use a medical term, that you were ready to make a change, that there was something going on that wasn't right?
Well, first of all, I was shocked that I even came up. I remember walking out of an event I went to and telling my friend, I said, when you were up on stage speaking, I realized I need to release my license. And I like stopped as we were walking and I was like, I can't even believe I just said that. Like, this is what I worked for towards since I was 14 years old, basically. And so it felt like complete shock and almost like I was almost like repelled by my choice, by what I was thinking about doing. Because that's
Okay.
how I was trained. As a therapist, you're trained to kind of be loyal, I guess, to the
Sure.
industry.
That's an interesting choice of words. But yeah, you're trained about the value of the licenses, the value of the training, the rigor that you go through, and you know, the code of ethics and all of those things. So it very much is, this is the best way. And so you were at a presentation and you heard somebody speak. Had there been anything going on before seeing this speech that there was an underlying, you know, sort of sense of awareness of coaching, or like discontent or confusion? What were some of the other things?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we are trained as therapists to be afraid of the board. Like, you're in a constant state of fear of losing your license, of getting a complaint, of doing anything wrong. Like, you, at least in Arizona, we are trained, like in school, to never have to come up against the board.
Okay.
And during that time, when I saw my friend in a presentation, I was starting to get into like women's empowering networking groups, and I was starting to do a deeper layer of my own journey of releasing fear. I was sick of being afraid of everything. I was raised in a fear-based, you know, family. I was, you know, raised in a fear-based religion. And then I went into this fear-based job and career industry, which of course makes total sense, right? We follow the duck in front of us. If we're raised in fear, we just keep perpetuating the fear. But I began to do a deeper layer of my own healing of my nervous system. I became a yoga instructor. I became a Reiki energy practitioner. And I just started to realize I'm sick of being afraid all the time. I'm sick of being in survival. And that's how I felt as a therapist. I was just in survival mode. And I just kept repeating patterns after patterns. And I was like, wait a minute, but I'm here working with my clients, trying to help them break patterns. I can only take them as deep as I've gone myself. So I dove deep in my own healing journey at that point and started with somatics and started with, you know, nervous system reset work and all of that. And I was like, oh, this needs to, I need to be done with this licensure. I can't keep coexisting with this licensure and trying to get out of fear. It just wasn't working. It wasn't aligning.
So that is super interesting. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that. So you said a couple of things I thought were really interesting. One is you're aware today of the pattern of you grew up in a community, like a family community and a religion community that had some fear in it, but you were not aware of it probably at the time, because we are not aware of that first set of circumstances that we're introduced to, right? So when did you become aware of the element of fear in your mindset or your origin story?
I love this question. It's a great question. So it happened in the beginning of 2020. So first of all, we had the pandemic, I mean, right? Like, let's be clear. Like, everybody learned about fear in the pandemic because we were all sitting in our own stuff. We couldn't leave the house. We couldn't engage. And we're like, we can't avoid, we can't distract from our things anymore by doing stuff because we're all just here sitting in it. But then another interesting thing happened. So I had grown my business as a therapist. It was a business. It was a private practice with four therapists under me. So I had four junior level or associate level therapists that I was training. And one day I get a notice from the board of behavioral health examiners, that I had a complaint against my license for a client that wasn't even mine.
Okay.
And instantly started spiraling. And I was like, I've never met this person. She's one of my associate level clients. And here's the kicker. Here's the best part about this story is it was about her insurance billing. So she filed a complaint against my clinical license because her insurance stopped paying for services. And somehow that was allowed to happen. And it took me 10 months to get that off my record, 10 months to clear it, 10 months to fight it with the board. I had to fight to get a billing complaint off my clinical license. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, anybody can file a complaint against my license for any reason, even if I'm not the clinician. I was like, this is messed up. I can't live like this anymore, is really what I said.
That is really interesting. Okay, so yeah, everybody does have pandemic stories, and the pandemic was like a zoom in for everybody about fear, because it was like fear was everywhere. It's like, be afraid of the people you live with, be afraid of the air you breathe, be afraid of the groceries you touch. It was like full on fear, fear, fear everywhere. And so that definitely is a thing. So let's make sure, I want to make sure that we don't assume that the people who are watching and listening know what the board is and the power that it has over that.
Absolutely.
So explain in just briefly in layman's terms, like what that relates to it and how they had such power to hold you in fear of being able to do business.
Absolutely. So the Board of Behavioral Examiners, that's what it's called here in Arizona. is the licensing board. They're the board that looks at your credentials, that looks at your education, that tells you, yes, you can practice as a psychotherapist here in Arizona, or no, you can't. It's also the group of people. Let's be really clear, none of them were independently licensed as therapists. So none of them had practiced as therapists at the time that this was happening. Some of them had associate level license, but they ended up only being in administration ever. They never were practicing therapists, which is also a really messed up thing, part about this whole situation. Some of them weren't even therapists. They were lay people that just decided to be on the board of behavioral health examiners. So they had zero background in therapy or psychology at all. But they're also the group of people that meets once or twice a month to look over complaints and to decide, yes, this complaint is valid. No, this complaint is not valid. And so they have the power in your hand to for your entire career. Because if you lose that license, you lose everything. You can't be employed even in an agency. You can't be on insurance panels. You can't do all these things. And the really important thing, it's much different today, even though it's only been 5 years, it's much different today than it was pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, we couldn't do virtual sessions. Pre-pandemic, we couldn't, everybody wasn't doing cash pay only. Pre-pandemic was a different world. So the pandemic was a huge catalytic moment for so many careers and so many ways of doing things, primarily in this coaching therapy world as well. So the board really holds your entire life, which is why we're trained to be afraid and to fly under the radar of the board at all
Yeah.
times.
And I mean, I think that there's levels to this, right? So I don't think that, I mean, everybody wants, professionals to be trained. The example I always use for this is like, I really want my surgeon to have some experience, right? And the guy flying the plane, I really want somebody to have made sure that he went to flight school, And so we're all very pro that, but sometimes these systems don't seem to be helping anybody in them. And that's why I call it a modern problem. I just got off the phone with one of my kids who needs is having a prescription filled out of state. They're an adult. So I say kid, but they're an adult. And the reason they called me is they said, "You're going to get the text because for some reason she doesn't get the text from the pharmacy. I do." So she's like, "Let me know when it's ready." So then, though, the text I get is that it's out of stock in the pharmacy, which is not a huge, none of this is a huge deal, right? Except the thing is, she's like, "So what do I do?" I'm like, "Well, you got to call the pharmacist or you got to call the doctor." And then I thought to myself, I was like, in this world where we are looking at landing a rocket ship on Mars, you would really think that these systems would actually talk to each other. Like they require each other. Like the doctor requires the pharmacist to fill it, the pharmacist requires the doctor. You would really think that there would be tools where these work back together better. And there are examples where they don't, where it's not supporting the patient, it's not supporting the medical professional, none of those things. And one of the things I've talked to other therapists, not, I don't know, for the podcast or just because of people I know, one of the challenges is that all therapists are licensed per state. And right. And so today in 2025, when we're jumping around the globe all the time, it is weird that, your doctor is limited and not supposed to support you if you move to another state. You got to find a new doctor, which is oh so easy, right?
It's exactly, especially when a lot of therapists have stopped taking insurance
Right.
for many reasons that I support and many reasons that clients don't understand. Therapists and insurance companies, they don't get, I was getting reimbursed maybe $70 an hour, but
Right.
that doesn't include all of the things I have to pay for that
Yeah,
then has to come
right.
out of that. So $70 an hour sounds like a lot to somebody who's an hourly employee,
Right.
but for
If you
somebody who
actually,
has,
if somebody hands you $70 cash, that's a lot.
but somebody who has six figures in student loans,
Yeah.
10 years of education and training,
Right.
and
And
on
you've
top of it
got,
has to pay for the overhead.
right, exactly. You've got rent and you've got employees and you've got insurance and you've got expenses. So like just like any business. And I think the audience is smart. They definitely do understand that. And so there is a difference. And I also think that in 2025, people are more aware than they ever have been before that, well, that's a generalization that may not be true, but people are very aware, I think, of the fact that, like, there's a difference between what the doctor collects or the hospital collects and what the insurance charges. And that's my point. And like, or my thought, I should say, that it's not really working for anybody. And so
No,
that's like a
no.
strange thing. Okay, so this was a couple of years ago. You were making this change. What were some of the, take us through some of, we've talked about this, but take us directly through some of the motivations and reasons that you wanted to make this change. You see your friend give a presentation on a stage and you're like, this is done for me. But what was going through your mind, your motivations?
A lot of what was going through my mind and what motivated me is that I know the work I do is really quality. And I know this because clients have talked to me about it. I know this because, like you said at the beginning, like clients getting wounded by other clinicians and coming in and telling me their stories breaks my heart all the time. But I also knew that, like, again, yes, the Board of Behavioral Health wasn't my best friend, but I knew that I was meant to serve a larger group of people. And I couldn't do that with my licensure. I couldn't extend beyond the state of Arizona, which again, it's different now. A lot of therapists are doing coaching alongside, but when I was a therapist, in my paperwork, in the Board of Behavioral Health rules and regulations, it clearly stated, and I have it highlighted from back then, that we are not to do coaching alongside our license. Like if we had a license and we were found to be doing coaching, we could lose our license. It was clearly stated in that paperwork. So again, and we're all rooted in fear. So I'm like, I can't do anything outside of the rules and regs.
Right.
Like, I don't like you don't want to risk that. So I knew I was meant to help more people and more women. And I was at this event with this women's empowerment, and women from all over the country were coming in and talking to them and being and interested in the work I did, but I couldn't offer them support. And I was like, this is messed up. I can't even help the people that want my help.
So when you saw the person who was speaking on stage, was what happened was it that you saw that you wanted to step into something that was more like that? Like, I'd like to be able to be on the stage and do what she's doing, and have that have the gates removed so that I can have a bigger message?
Yes and no. So her conversation was not even about therapy. She was a school teacher that was shifting into coaching
Okay.
after retirement. So she was just shifting and expanding her horizons with her career. And I was like, why? Well, I want to do that. I want to
Yeah.
expand my horizons with my career.
So then the mindset shift that was happening, you had these restrictions and these fears. It's a legitimate consequence. Like, we're talking about fears, but if the
Yeah.
board moves against you, it's a legitimate consequence that is going to impact your ability to earn a living. So that I have a lot of respect for people taking that seriously, right? So, but your mindset shift was that what had been seen when you were 14 as the path to advance and to excel and to be your best person had now become a limiter that was in your
Yes.
way of what you wanted to do. All right. So,
Absolutely.
so now though, let's talk about this. What concerns did you have, if any, about making this decision? Because there is absolutely a difference in audience perception between the person who is a licensed psychotherapist and the person who is a coach sometimes.
Absolutely. There are a lot of concerns because, again, I was rooted in that fear of like, this is the only way I can make money and I need this piece of paper to show credibility. And then I realized I don't lose my credibility because I don't pay $500 every year for a piece of paper. Like, that's just a really expensive piece of paper, my license was. I don't lose my credibility. I don't lose my education. I don't lose who I am and what I do. And I had to really work through that process of I don't lose anything except I no longer have to pay for this really expensive piece of paper every year.
All
The other
right.
thing is to really realize for me as well was again shifting that whole belief structure of there's only this one way. Back in the day when I was 14 and even up until basically 2020, 2019 maybe, but that was the only way. Like, yes, there were coaches, but they weren't like taken seriously for the most part. I remember meeting a life coach and being like, what is that? Like back in the day and being like, what? Like, that's just ridiculous. Like that's just somebody who didn't want to go to school and get the credentials. But it's a different world today.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is it may have only been 5 years. It has been a long 5 years. A lot has shifted in 5 years.
That is the understatement of the century. The other thing that's really interesting is that that idea, that very pervasive idea, and there's there's levels of this, that there's only one way to do something. And, you know, and the medical profession is one of these places that I see this a lot. There's a interview that was out this last week of a woman who went back to school after being an accountant. Her name is Angela Downey. And it had me thinking about this a lot because as I raised my kids, they would give examples of people being able to change careers and make up your mind and all of these things. But the one that many experts in academia always point to is that the kid who wants to be a surgeon, they frequently know that when they're 6 or 7, and it's like the straight as an arrow path. And it's like this is a kid who's never allowed to veer off the path even for 1 minute, has to be a top performer, isn't allowed to make a mistake. And it's what, like a very strict example of this is the one way you do this. You have to get the top scores. You can't step out of line. You can't change your mind. You can't change your degree. Like everybody who's been to college knows the fear of organic chemistry 1 and 2 for anybody who's going to medical school, right? But then the reality is that there are actually people who don't follow that path. There are people who have done that. It's just that it's one of those things where you can't see it from inside the bottle. You won't meet those people when you're inside the system.
Well, and the other reality with that, Amy, is that when you're trained in that one way thing, like I was, my family was that way. Like, you have to go to college, you have to get your degree, you have to go to grad school, you have to, like, you just do that. And then you do that for 30 years, and then you retire, and then you die. Like, that was the way I
Right.
was
And somewhere
attracted.
along
But
there, you're supposed to be happy. Happiness comes, you don't have to work on it. Just instantly follow the rules, follow the instructions. Happiness and comes along the way. Yes.
And so you learn that anybody who doesn't do that is a failure, or is not happy, or is struggling. And then you realize, wait a minute, that's not true.
Right.
I mean, look at the majority of like millionaires and billionaires in our world. They're college dropouts, a lot of them.
A
Like,
lot of
they
them, yeah.
don't, like, but again, when you're trained in this one way thinking, until you start opening and expanding and exploring and researching, you just see the evidence. And that's a big thing that I work with my clients on. You see me the evidence for whatever you want to see the evidence
Yeah.
for.
And that's how, that's the limiting belief. The belief is a limit. Like it creates the
Yes.
boundary that you can't cross over. But you don't see it that way until somebody shows you, like, oh, by the way, did you realize this isn't like, this is not actually, this is not a rule.
And that's the thing that the pandemic really did for us. It came in, and it was a trauma. We can call it a collective trauma because it
Yep.
was. But what trauma does is it disrupts the pattern, and it made us look for other ways. We all had to go online for our business. And then we're like, wait a minute, I can do this online? This
Yes.
is amazing. Like, you start, and again, so something that was only allowed to do in person, we could now shift to online. It was like, wait a minute. So there's no more geographical limitations.
Yep.
My clients did amazing work online. They still do amazing work online. And
Yeah.
it's like, oh, wait. So everything we were taught is not accurate. And you start to then ask the questions. You start to then do the research. And you start to then think outside the box and realize, oh, wait, everything isn't as it seems.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I had been on this spiritual journey starting in 2017 as well, and going into doing yoga and teaching yoga and going into becoming a Reiki master and going into doing yoga nidra, which is a form of meditation, and seeing clients that I was able to incorporate all those things, making progress. But the thing is, my license was not allowing me to do those. I could
Right.
not do Reiki on a client in my private practice, even if I knew it was going to support them in relieving stress and anxiety and healing. I was told by the board, again, no, you can't do that. That's not empirically studied.
That is
I
so.
was told.
Someday, if I was doing a, if I was a person who's going to do research, which I'm not this person, I'm never ever going to do this.
I love research.
Right. So you should. I would love to research yoga and Reiki as the gateway drug to spiritual practices and whatever else you want to insert there. There's so many conversations of people that I talk to who were on very linear academic paths, and yoga is one of the very first things that steps them off.
Part of that reason is because we're on these linear paths, and we're in our heads. I mean, you're just in your head. Psychology, in your head. It's about the brain. It's about the mental
Yeah.
health, right? Trauma cuts us off from our body.
Yep.
Trauma wants us to live in our head. It's easier for us to understand things. It's easier for us to make sense of things than to feel them. What yoga does is it slows the brain down and gets us in our body. So we start feeling things again, which starts opening doorways and pathways. And yes, sometimes it sucks, because sometimes feelings suck. They just do. They're painful. But when we allow them to move through and we feel them, we don't have to just live in our heads anymore. We can live embodied. And that's such a beautiful healing moment. And it's so powerful. And that's why there's such a shift when we start doing yoga or we start doing Reiki and we start to realize we're more than just our brains.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a really, I will give weight to the fact that somewhere in the audience, there's somebody who's listening to this who's like, I don't understand what that means. And I just want to give a note of acknowledgement that it is one of those things, the embodiment of an experience is hard to verbalize from one person to another. Whereas when you experience it, it's a little bit different. So I remember one time after I'd had like kids in it was not probably, maybe it was yoga, but it could have been a trainer who was like, engage your core. And all of a sudden I was like, I don't even know where my core is. Like, where did it go? Like, and it was like the action of like reconnecting with that part of the muscle and what it felt like. And so that's a very sort of surface example of connecting with the sensation in your body. But if you don't realize you're disconnected, or if you aren't disconnected, it's hard to explain. And so if it makes no sense and sounds like, crazy talk, I honor that. I do. All
Absolutely.
right. So what were your hopes and dreams and your vision of what could happen as a result of making this foundational change in your career?
So I really hoped that, I was going to switch online and all of a sudden have all these clients and all of this like notoriety and all of this. I guess notoriety isn't the right word, but I was going to become known and be able to
Okay.
support more people. I was being, and to some extent, that's happened. I have clients all over the country and I have clients in other countries at this point as well, which is so much fun.
Very good.
But
Did you, so you had a practice with four other therapists. Is a part of the story that you actually, and maybe this is a pandemic version of the story, did you actually end up closing down that practice and shifting completely?
yes, I did. So I officially closed the practice in, at the end of 2020, which I had known was going to happen at the end of 2019. I made that decision pre-pandemic.
Okay.
And so the pandemic just kind of like made it all happen a little bit more chaotically, but those therapists knew in January of 2020 before the pandemic hit that this was our last year. I was closing out some of their hours. They were finishing those 3,200 hours, so I was signing paperwork, so I was finishing it out. It just ended up, we then went online and it just ended up being a little bit more disjointed than the original plan, but what actually goes as planned.
Right. No, and everybody, the one thing that was unifying about the chaos that happened in spring of 2020 was that as disarming and confusing as it was, everybody was confused all at the same time. And so that was, it was okay to, it was one of those unique times where you can just throw up your hands and be like, I don't understand what's happening, and admit it without embarrassment because nobody knew what we were doing or what was going to happen. What did you, the people within your professional circle, right? Because as a licensed psychotherapist, when you say, hey, I'm going to let this go and become a coach, and many people who go into coaching, especially those, there are some very high level coaches who have left behind, a lot of academic credentials. So you're not the only person to go through this. But what did those people think when you walked into the room and you're like, hey, I'm going to be a life coach?
So I lost everyone.
Really? Oh, that
My
sucks.
own therapist that I had trained don't even I don't even exist to them anymore. Like don't I it's a very cliquish, which is also validation that I was making the right decision for me. It's a very cliquish community. I had countless referral sources. I had countless, colleagues, like so many of my friends, like that we hung out, we were all therapists, and I talk, and a couple of them have trickled back into my world over the last couple of years. But for the most part, for that first couple of years, nobody talked to me. Nobody acted like I existed even. And
That's
so
rough.
it was very lonely. It was very
Did you
lonely
think that would
transition.
happen, or were you, did it catch
No.
you by surprise?
It caught me by surprise that some of the people that I felt closest to disregarded me, but I've also was not surprised knowing the field of therapy and shifting to coaching and knowing the perception back then of coaching as being, unregulated and those people are uneducated. Like there was so, like I knew that because I'd lived in that and I had
Yeah.
believed that for a while as well. So I wasn't surprised overall that referral sources stopped talking to me, like even referral sources I'd known for years and talked to for years. I wasn't as surprised that all of that, because it looked like for them, and I can see this and I can give them so much compassion and generosity, and that for them, I was turning my back on them. It was a very personal attack. Like I no longer like believed in their field because I was leaving. It's like I still believe in therapy. I think there's still very much a very important part of this profession and just this experience of transformation is therapy. Like I still 100% even encourage some of clients to, yeah, see your therapist and I can see you alongside them or you can come back and see me afterwards. It's cool because you started to talk about people not understanding this embodiment piece, and it's a journey. And I like to talk to people through this, like through my experiences. I was very in a traumatic state. We all become therapists for a reason, let's be really clear. And so I needed to be in my head. It's easier to be in the head. So I learned all the concept, the clinical skills, the mindset stuff. And that's where mindset was such a big thing 5 years ago. And then it went into embodiment because what happens is we enter the body through the mind. We have to learn the concepts of embodiment so the body can begin to open up and let us drop in. And
Okay.
so the mind is important in the embodiment practice because sometimes you have to get the mind on board. Otherwise, your nervous system is going to continue to replay those patterns and those limiting beliefs. That's going to keep you disconnected. So we got to get the mind on board. We got to get the brain on board to soften and feel, oh, it can be safe to go in. Let's go safe to
Yeah.
go in. And then I can come back out and regulate. And then I can go back in. And then I can come back out and regulate. And this is the process of titration. This is the process of healing. This is the process of expanding the window of tolerance by having this like in and out, like skirting the edges and going then deeper and then going out. And so we know that we are safe.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Have you read Marsha Linehan's biography?
I haven't, but I know her work that I'm her
That's
DBT work. I mean,
DBT.
obviously I
So
use that, yes.
yeah, so she wrote, you would probably enjoy it because her story, it's her personal story
Okay.
of going through that, and you might enjoy it because there's a lot of similarities. The most important one, that her work is very heavily driven by her own personal experience. And you said, we become, we go into this based on our own personal experience. And she talks very openly and candidly in the book, I'm forgetting the title of, about how she w lived in fear that her professional peers would find out about her personal experience, which I think
Absolutely.
is really interesting. And also how she had to fight to introduce the ideas that she came up with, which many of which I, yeah,
Yes.
this I'm talking about where I don't know, but she's a very, res these ideas are very respected now. So,
Absolutely.
okay. So not well received by your peers.
No, not well received. Again, like I said, I still, it's so funny because I still see them lurking. Like they don't ever like anything on social media, but you can see their little bubble that they've watched my stories on Instagram and things. I'm like, okay, so you're still adjacent. Like you're still here adjacently, like seeing what I'm doing. Like you can say hi, is what I want to say to them. Like you can say hi to me. I'm okay. Like,
That is such a modern thing. It's like you're internet stalking your friends with your professional circles. That's so funny. All right, so you have a vision that you're going to release this, and that it's going to, everybody, when we start a business, we always think, oh, rainbows and unicorns, it's going to be massively successful. Everybody will be knocking on my door. After you make this shift to coaching, it's probably, gradual. You shut down your practice, things like that. Was it immediately successful, or is there a tangible sort of price that you paid for shifting your business from one like client line to another?
I can't help but laugh. There is a price. I paid a big price because I hired a lot of coaches to help me figure out this marketing thing. So the biggest thing that people, yes, I have been successful as a coach. Yes, I have clients. Yes, I am working. Am I as successful as I would want? Do I have as many clients? No. And part of that is a big, huge part of it. In school to be a therapist, you're not trained to market.
Yep.
You're not trained on marketing. And yes, I have, like, I did go to do some marketing classes or some business classes before because I went back and forth sometimes. So I was a pre-business major for a while, like 2 semesters. We're not trained to market, we're trained to network. So that 10 years I was in school and I was working as, mental health professionals and, I was working in lower level mental health positions. I was making connections. I rarely left a job without connections. And so when I became a therapist, I had all these connections. So I had all these referral sources and I had a name for myself. I specialized in trauma and eating disorders. And so I was one of the go-to therapists in my geographical location for eating disorders and trauma. So I never had a problem. I always had a wait list. My therapist under me, like they had wait lists because people respected them because they respected me. So I didn't have to market. So then I go into coaching, and now I have to figure out how to market. And that's foreign to me. You might as well have been speaking Greek to me because I was like, I don't feel good talking about myself. Let's be, it's still not the most fun thing on social media to try to market myself. And so then I had to do that work again on boasting or bragging. That is all that training. So I had to do that. But I hired these coaches to help me, these business coaches, and I got scammed every single time. So we're talking six figures. So I have six figures in student loans, and I spent like six figures over 5 years in marketing coaches and business coaches that were just scam artists. They just
Oh,
were.
that's painful.
It was. And so then I again I do, but it is painful and it is frustrating. But every time this happens, I was like, you know what? This is a deeper layer of my own work that I need to do because there's a reason I attracted this into my life. I'm a firm believer. There's a reason I attracted this. And what I've really come down to is I just have to be me.
Yeah.
I don't need the marketing gimmicks. I don't need the things because I didn't, it didn't align with me. What they were telling me to do, like, didn't align with me. So of course it didn't work with me. I was
Yeah.
like, I'm not gonna be manipulative. I'm not gonna tell people I can heal a little trauma in 90 minutes. I can't do that. That's not real. Like
Snap, you're healed.
exactly. So it's really just like, again, reaffirming, come into yourself, come back to yourself and just speak from your heart, which is what I've always done, which is what I do with all of my clients, is just be you. Give the information you know, and you're going to attract the people that are going to come to you. So it's been a
Yeah.
big healing. It's been a different layers of healing, and that's what life is.
So yeah, I think one of the things that I like to shout from the mountains is that there is a level of retraining. Like, listen, if you go to a traditional school, you learn that the only way to learn something is to go to have somebody teach you to do it. And then you pick up a secondary thing, which is that it's that person's job to tell you when you're ready to do it. There's a test and a certificate. And so undoing that takes some time. And there's a point where sometimes when you get to the point where you're like, oh, you know, these people who are offering to teach me, maybe they don't actually know what they're saying they know. And also, maybe I don't actually need them. Maybe because the work of like so many things is very much like learning how to walk. You actually have to try it. Like, you actually have to try it and figure it out for yourself. And it's going to look a little differently. But that is. It seems very obvious when you lay it out, and most of us did learn how to walk and talk that way, but it is a big mental step when you're like, I think I'm just going to do it myself. So, because that's scary. It's really, really scary. And there's walking to any corner of business or anything, and visibility is a top thing. Okay, so here's the question that I know that, oh, actually, you know what? I thought that this might not be a good question, but you've started to talk about this, and so you might really like it. What kind of industry awareness, if you know, and if you don't just say so, or discussion on the medical side of things is changing to allow people with therapists, and maybe you don't know because you're out of it, to modify the way that they are able to do things, to be online, to work with people who are transient over geographic borders that are clients. Like, is there anything happening to allow people to better support a modern client as a therapist?
Yes, I believe there is. Now, across geographical lines, not unless you're licensed in the state in which you're working.
What?
So
That's so like crazy.
yes, you can live in Arizona and work with somebody in California if you have a California license. So there is still that limitation. But what I do see is a lot more therapists are doing somatic work in their practice, which isn't empirically studied either, which isn't formally. It's not taught in school. I don't know any program, any grad school program that's taught somatic work. So they are opening the doors for somatic and even some energetic work. I have known therapists that do Reiki that are now getting a letter from the board saying they're allowed as long as they're trained in it. So it's not studied, but they are more accepting of holistic means of support. So it's like the brain is loosening and softening its rigidity of the board and letting, okay, there is some research that shows that Reiki is not just, woo-woo stuff, or that yoga is not just woo-woo stuff, that it's actually supportive of the system. So they are expanding that, which is great. It would have been great 6 years ago while I was still licensed, but it's okay. This journey is what it is. And so, so it is great that they are expanding how people work with clients. Again, there's still going to be that geographical because every state has its own licensing requirements.
Yeah, they just, I will say, I think that as the state lines go, I hope that they are like paying attention to the fact that, like, a lot of people, and this was accelerated by the pandemic, right? A lot of people live in many different places or travel. And like, it's just an interesting thing. We no longer always in the spot. So, but that's just my thing, 'cause I have people all over in different states and I'm trying to like juggle like kids in one state and doctors in another. And sometimes that's a giant pain in the butt. So, all right. So, in a second, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to talk directly about what you're doing now and how you want people to find you online after they listen and watch the show. And then I'm going to share an offer that you have directly for the audience.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for this moment. So I do what I call soul-powered life coaching. So I work with, we are going to live this soul-powered life, that life that just lights you up, that you are so excited to jump out of bed. And the way that I do this is through my body wisdom method. So I work with the energetic centers of the body. If you want to call them chakras, you can call them chakras. I typically do, but some people don't like that term, so we just call them energy. Each space in the body, each energetic setting, energetic center in the body holds its own story. Holds its own gifts, its own wounds, its own traumas. And when we address this from, I do the root up, so from the base of our being up, we can start to address the individual traumas in that area, heal those so we can move up and we can move the energy up and we can just be in this flow of energy. This is where my yoga comes in. This is where my Reiki comes in. This is where the chakra system comes in. But it really is unlocking the flow of energy in your system. So you're not just up here in your head, so that you are embodied and you're able to heal from that root cause of that. So I do this through body wisdom method. We go through the different energy centers. We work our way up to bring the energy up and to heal all of those blockages and give you tools that you can use when you're starting to feel like a trauma is coming up. We do nervous system work. I'm a nervous system expert trained in that as well. And so it's all I've created this program to be connected together, to be this holistic being, mind, body, soul being, way to heal. So that's kind of what I do. I do it on a one-on-one basis. I do have, some small groups or some group offerings that I offer at times, but it's really potent and powerful, and my clients are loving it and seeing a lot of really good results with it and healing their traumas. So I have this, the kind of the intro to that is this masterclass, your body, unlocking your body blueprint. Where I go through the chakra system, I go through the energy system to give you a high level understanding of the chakras so you can start to feel some things. We do a lot of, somatic work in that master class as well. So you can start to feel what I'm talking about. If you're struggling with embodiment, you'll really start to feel what it feels like to be in your body through this class. And that's going to be a free offering for your listeners here.
Yeah. So absolutely. So what's your website where people can find you? Shout out your website and I'll put that in the show notes
So
also.
my website is under construction, but
Okay.
you can find me on Instagram or on TikTok or LinkedIn or where
Okay.
I'm,
So you're
at
on
most.
social and we'll put those links in the show notes. And you touched on it. You got this an offering for the audience, the Body Blueprint Masterclass, 90-minute masterclass, and you talked all about it. Value of the masterclass is normally $77, but there's a link in the show notes where people can get that for free. And that link is in the show notes wherever you're listening or watching the show. But the easiest way to get these links so that you don't have to dig up a pen or write down all the numbers and all of these things is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community. Then I send it directly to your email box and you can click on it. I want to thank you very much, Kara, for that very generous offer. Are you ready for the final three questions?
I think so.
Some people get really nervous about these, but usually they're just ridiculous. Okay. What is your favorite way to incorporate movement into your day?
Dance.
Dance, like
I put on a, I put on song and music, and I just move my body and dance around my kitchen and my house.
dancing
I'm
in the
always dancing
kitchen.
around.
So, when you do that, are you wearing headphones or you have like a speaker that's in your kitchen?
It depends if I'm home alone or if I'm not home alone. I mean, if I'm home alone, and sometimes it doesn't depend. Sometimes it's just blasting anyways.
Very good. All right, very good. All right, so this fits. All right, name a song that when you hear it, you are going to sing along and dance because it's just too good and you can't help it, even if people are around you in the grocery store.
That I feel better when I'm dancing song, and I think it's from a movie. Is it the Charlie Brown movie or something like that? I think it's Meghan
Okay.
Trainor, but.
Oh, okay. All right. I
Yeah.
love that. I love that. I write these in advance, so I can't believe I got that. That's that was that's there's a synergy there. All right, very good.
Yes.
What is something that other people, in quotations, do for fun, but you have no interest and you are never even ever going to try to do that thing.
Oh gosh, what is something people do for fun that I do not find any joy in? There are probably so many things. Why can't I think about it? I mean, I don't know, anything like jumping out of a plane, that's not fun. I'm never doing that.
That's the one that comes to mind, top of mind. People are like, not that.
Not that. I just had a friend say she's doing it for her birthday this year. I'm like, okay. I
I
hope you make
love
it to your
that
next
for you.
birthday.
Have a great time.
Exactly.
That's it, Kara Elizabeth. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much. This has been a blast.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.